Welcome to Tonic Titans. This is where we sit down with genuine industry leaders for relaxed chats about what's made them the titans they are today. Hello, hello. I'm Chris Watts, CEO of Tonic. Very excited to be here today for only our second ever episode of Tonic Titans. We've been titan hunting again, and we're delighted to say we caught one, a fantastic one at that. A huge welcome to Pete Cherovich, COO at Northern Trust. Thanks so much for making the time for the chat, sir.
Chris, thanks for having me. I really enjoy being the second person on your podcast, and I'm looking forward to a great conversation.
Thank you, Pete. Now, it's probably worth me saying, I know Pete's a humble chap, so it's probably worth saying up front that Pete is a hugely respected industry leader and a top gent. He's had a very important and lasting influence over the years, helping to shape today's custodian ecosystem. Pete spent almost the last two decades at Northern Trust, rapidly rising through the organization from product strategy, divisional head roles to the very top of the business where Pete is COO today. But that's enough from me, because I think you guys want to hear from Pete himself, including his journey, what makes him tick, and maybe some of his secrets to success. Pete, as I've said, real pleasure to have you on. You ready to do this?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. So we're going to start with our quick fire favorites, which does what it says on the tin. So some rapid Q&A just to get to know you a bit better. So here goes. Favorite food?
Steak.
Nice. Nice and simple. Can't argue with that. Favorite drink?
Let's go with an old fashioned, I think.
Very good. Yeah, I'm a fan of an old fashioned myself. Favorite music or music artist?
Well, I think in general, I would say anything from the 1970s. I'm of that vintage, but right now I'm on a Coldplay phase. Coldplay it is for today.
Have you been lucky enough to see them?
I have not, but I wanted to.
Yeah, if you can, they are incredible live. Great choice. And look, I know you travel a lot. Favorite country or place?
So I'm going to go for two. So I say the UK. I love coming to London. I really do. But in terms of beauty, Queenstown and the South Island in New Zealand is the best place on earth.
Oh, really? Very good. I don't know Queenstown well. Scenery?
Very much. Hiking, small little village, and just hiking and outdoors is great.
Oh, gorgeous. And I know you're a sporty man, so this might be a tough question, but favorite sport?
Football.
And we should be clear there, because I think when you say football, I know you're a Fulham fan. You mean American soccer.
I'm going to go with both, because I actually still have season tickets to the New England Patriots as well. So I do love both American football and, we'll say, because I'm in London, proper football.
Very good. We'll take that. Awesome. And then I guess look, something that I'm sure all of our listeners will want to know from the likes of you and other titans. What do you do in your spare time? Favorite pastimes?
I would say I'd love golf. And, you know, my goal in life is to be the worst golfer to play the best courses around the globe. And I'm lucky enough to be succeeding in both of those goals. So it's going well.
Love it. Yeah, I'm a real hacker, but on bad courses normally. So I prefer your setup. And then a dangerous one, just to end, favorite person.
Oh, no, that's an easy one, Chris. Her name is Aaron, and she is my granddaughter that is now 14 months old.
I love it. I love it. How many grandkids have you got, Pete?
Just have one on the way, though. So we're starting a collection, as I told the kids. That's great. Let's go.
She'll get a lot of love, huge amount of love. Very cool. Okay. So I guess coming back to the career and actually starting with today, do you mind giving us the skinny just on your world today? What's the current role? What does it look like?
So as we said at the beginning, I'm Chief Operating Officer at Northern Trust. And, you know, that encompasses everything from ensuring the day-to-day operations run effectively, ensuring from a risk and resiliency perspective that you're not only have everything buttoned down so that risks are managed and you are resilient, but you're actually trying to figure out how to look around the corners and see what might go wrong and prepare for that. You're also responsible for anything that goes wrong. So as I sit around the executive table and if there was a problem, 11 heads turn towards me. Well, what are we doing about it? And why did this happen? And so you learn quickly that it can be a lonely place sometimes if you get stressed out. So you have to be calm and cool and deal with all the issues that come out. And all of that is sort of the day to day. But then the fun part is you spend an enormous amount of time thinking about the future, because your job as COO is also to think about all the new technologies, where the world's headed, and how you need to future-proof your company to make sure that you're viable in 5, 10, 15 years going forward. So it's very, very varied and keeps him busy.
It's a very cool role, actually. It's a very cool role, the sort of the day-to-day and then the look forwards as well. And I guess all of that in a really choppy climate must up the ante.
Absolutely. One day, you know, someone will walk in your office and there's a personnel issue. The next day, you have people in the Middle East you have to get out. The next day, you realize there's, oh, wait a minute, there could be an increased activity for cyber. So what are we going to do to lock this down more? All right, have more people look at things. Then let's talk about digital assets. And all right, so what are we doing with stablecoin? Are we, et cetera, et cetera. So the variability of the topics, right, is enormous, from people issues to technology issues to process issues to truly the economics of the world, right, and the macro, you know, geopolitical world that we live in.
Very cool. Thank you, sir. It's important that I think we all get a good flavor for what life at Northern looks like today for you. But I think where we'd love to go next is all the way back to the start, actually, of your career journey. Do you mind taking us there and telling us a bit more about actually pre-career? What did Pete want to be growing up?
So funny enough, I wanted to be a spy. So I actually major in university in Soviet studies. Back then, the Soviet Union was there. We were in the middle of the Cold War. So the Soviet studies was it. But I ended up getting married 2 months after I graduated college and needed a real job. And so that I had two choices. I could have gone to a office supply store that had two stores at the time, and they wanted to do a management training program. Or I could be this thing called a fund accountant at a bank. And everyone made fun of me because I was going into retail. So I took the banking job. And now, Chris, you're going to ask me, well, what was the office supply store? And that was Staples. Staples had two stores at the time. So there you go. No complaints. That sort of might have been a missed opportunity. But what I really wanted to do was be a spy. So I can't do that either.
That's an awesome story. So you could be sitting here CEO of Staples.
We'll get to what qualities gets you to the role you're in, and you realize it has nothing to do with banking skills, you know, your ability to be an accountant or anything like that, right? It's just who you are.
I hear you. Well, look, for what it's worth, I think you took the right route. I know how much variety you enjoy in the day-to-day role, and not sure that same variety would exist on the alternative side. Certainly in the spy route, though. Wow, yeah, that's a different game. Very cool. So bearing in mind you had this decision point at the start and you chose to go the fund accounting route, could you just take us through those early stages of your career and what those roles look like?
Yeah. So, you know, I literally grew up, started as a fund accountant. I started at State Street, and State Street had an interesting model in the 80s. And what they did was you had a group, and so got promoted all the way up, and now I was managing a group of 10 clients. And if the sales team took you out on the road to pitch a piece of business, then that client became yours. And so it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you could sell, you ended up getting more clients and ended up becoming a bigger deal within the organization because you kept growing. So they took people that could run the group, have happy clients, and that could sell, and that's how they facilitated the growth back then. And so it was really an interesting model that worked out real well. But then, and I don't know, because I can go through other different jobs. There were a few key jobs that I had or key things I've done. I'll start with, there was one point where this lady was sitting outside my office, and she had been at State Street for 20, 25 years. And I remember she had five portfolios on her desk. Didn't matter what she did for right now. She had five portfolios. I sat down with her and just watched what she did for 2 days. Then we made changes. And a week later, she went from five portfolios to 15 portfolios. So I'm like, okay, this is good. I then did that with every person in my group. And I had capacity. So I went to my boss and said, this is what I've done. And he's like, wow, that's great. Go do that over there. I'm like, okay, but can I, instead of giving you capacity, the four people, can I keep two of them to start this group? He's like, okay, that's a deal. So that two people ended up growing to about 25 people, where we not only did consulting for internal at State Street, we did it for some of our clients. So that was sort of the first thing. And it was really just saying there's a better way to do things and then turning that into a business model. I did try to get the company to say, let's go into consulting business and compete with, you know, the big six at the time. And they said, no, we're not doing that. You just keep doing what you're doing internally. Next big move for me was going to Japan. So at the time, I was going to be, again, still a State Street, was going to be a position where I was the person in the business that could interpret what technology needed and really be in charge of sort of that business architecture. Walked into a person who essentially had my role at the time at State Street on a Friday, and he's like, you could do that, Pete, or you could go to Japan. came in the Monday morning and said, yep, we'll go. And so that we, there's my wife and three kids that were 6, 4, and 2 at the time. I found out 6 months later, I was the 10th person they asked, all right? People had taken weeks to go over there, taken vacation, tested it out, right? Nobody went. I took the job after a weekend of thinking. You fast forward 2 years after I was in Japan, my career had blown past all those other 10 people, right? Take the bird in the hand. And the last one was really the move to Northern, where I would say one of the best things for me to learn was that I knew the industry, but I didn't know the detailed technology. I didn't know how Northern worked. So I had to manage versus when you actually grew up someplace and you could do it, you knew that you knew everything in detail. The desire to just take over is huge. I was able to break that desire because I didn't know how to take over. I just knew how to manage. And so that was a big step in my career to go from sort of that doer manager to a pure play. Okay, you're just managing. And that turned out to be very important for my own career development.
Love it. Love it. Oh, that's great background. Thank you. It feels like there's a, right from the start, there was a real growth focus for you. Is that fair? Based on that first role you described at Stake Street, it was all around how to build the business and build yourself in parallel.
Yeah, it's funny. People sometimes ask me, did you always plan to be this position? Did you want to be CEO? What did you want to do? And I always come back with, no, I just didn't want to be bored and I want to do something different. And I wanted to just continue to have more influence and felt comfortable that that would continue to happen as long as you worked hard, et cetera. I did have goals financially that I played in my head in terms of I wanted to be at this point or that point in terms of how much I made. But that was more just a scorekeeping mechanism more than anything else. But it was just keep going, then just keep driving, then keep growing.
Keep learning, it sounds like as well, right? I know you've got an appetite to continually learn. Awesome. Do you mind just, I guess, the Japan move?
Yes.
A move that probably back in the day, there wouldn't have been a ton of Americans going that way necessarily. Do you mind just digging into that one a little bit? What was it like for the family, for you?
So it's very interesting. First of all, so this was 1990, end of 98 to 02 that we were there. And I would say at the time, Japan was still, forgive the phrase, very Japanese. So you wouldn't see much English out there. All right, people, you know, there was some English spoken, but still not a lot. And it's a big city, right? So very little grass. And if you wanted to go on the grass, you know, a lot of times grass was to look at, not necessarily to play on for the kids. I give you an example. I played an indoor football game, 6-on-6, right? Joined the league. One of our fields was, because it wasn't during the winter, was the 1964 Olympic swimming pool. We played inside the pool.
Oh, wow.
And ran around inside the pool, right? They used that as the football ground, right? Because it was big enough for kind of an indoor game. So they maximized space. What I learned, though, from a business perspective in Japan is that no matter how much you think you understand the culture, you don't understand the culture and you're not a part of it. So understand what you understand, but understand that you will never get it all and be respectful of that and you'll be fine. But if you ever get too cocky, you think, no, I know how things work there. I don't care what country, you're going to lose because you don't. Because it's really hard unless you grew up there, right, to really, really figure it out. So you've got to sit back and respect and understand that you don't. Big, big lesson and helped me globally then do more deals and have relationships with clients, right? And not make assumptions that would burn me in the end.
I got you. Yeah, that's an interesting insight. I think reading between the lines, it sounds like you're saying that Japanese stint sort of added strings to your bow for subsequent leadership roles when you came back to the States. Is that fair?
No question. And even little things, we put I still remember putting in a system which says, okay, here's where we're going to charge clients and there's going to be a minimum fee. They never did minimum fees. Like, okay, we'll do minimum fees. They all say yes, yes, yes. And then a year later, I put in client prof. And one client was like absolutely horrific. I'm like, wait a minute, that's the same client we did minimum fees. And then I go back, I'm like, did you do this? And they're like, oh, no. I'm like, you have to do it. So again, in Japan, hi is not necessarily yes. It is, I understand what you're requesting, but I have no intention of actually doing that. So what response are you getting? You need to figure it out.
I hear you. Very good. Yeah, I think it's such an important lesson in business in general, isn't it? Being respectful and acknowledging those cultural differences country by country. It's so important. So building relationships and ultimately doing business. Very good. So that's super helpful. So we've taken a quick peek at the look back, I guess you've had a number of very senior roles on your journey, Pete, and different climates and cultures that you've just described. What do you feel like are the biggest lessons learned that you've gained on the way up?
So I think I'll start with a funny story because it was one of my big lessons right away. So I've always been very transparent. And I think that being transparent is the number one thing for me, because then you don't have to think about how you positioned it with somebody. Did you tell somebody one thing and it's another? You just tell the truth and you're transparent. You're always okay. So that's great. And I've always been fairly candid, right? Sometimes in a radical way. So when I was a manager, so first time giving reviews, so I had 8 people working for me, went through the first one, went fine, second person comes in for the review. Now this individual, I knew that no one on the team liked that person, and I thought they should know. So during the review, I said, one thing you should know, no one here likes you. Needless to say, it didn't go over so well, and there are better ways to be a good manager than telling someone that no one likes them. Right? I had to definitely change how I've used my radical candor, right? But you have to go through that because no one tells you these things, right? So you have to learn them. And so there's nothing that can replace experience. And people will say, like managers will always say, well, you'll get promoted, but you need more experience. Your job as an individual is to figure out, okay, what experiences do I need and how do I get them? And that's why you never repeat the same year of work. You always have to learn something new. You get the same job, but learn something new. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned on the way out, is that keep learning, keep doing something different. And so when they talk about experiences, you can list out, here's all the ones that I have.
Love it. And we talked about your sports a little bit earlier. I know there's a winner's mentality, isn't there, that I feel like you have, right? You want to win for the company. You want to win for yourself. Is it worth spending a second on that?
I'm one of the most competitive people that I know. I hate losing at anything. I will debate. I have to tell people in my meetings, now I'm going to debate the other side. I'm not telling you that that's what I agree with, but I'm just telling you that I want to have this debate, and please debate back and forth with me, because I'm going to come at you hard and it will seem like I'm intimidating and you might shut down, and I don't want you to. I want you to debate me. And so I actually have to do that now, because I realized partway through my career that I would just go hard and then win the debate. But that isn't necessarily the right thing that you want to do. So very, very competitive. I would say one of the skills is taking that competitiveness along with being innovative is really important. And what do I mean by that? As an individual in whatever corporation or company you're in, you're always going to have a box drawn around you. And that box is going to be limiting what you can do. And maybe it's going to be what the regulator says you can do. Maybe it will be how much money you have. It could be a time box, right? But you'll have constraints. And the ability to get an outcome with whatever constraints you're, you know, put under, that is a critical skill. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Apollo 13. So think of that. They had a certain amount of time. They had only a certain number of things they had to do, right, to make that breathing apparatus and be able to get oxygen. Right? That's what I'm talking about in business. That creativity is so critical. And if you have people like that, they're worth gold, because no matter what's thrown at them, they're like, we're going to win and we're focused and we're going to get creative. And you got to have both. But if you have both, that's what for me has really paid off, is that combination of skills.
Love it. I hear you. It's the outside the box thinking, isn't it? Continually, there's, you know, don't accept a no, find a way to make a win, right? And it might not be the perfect win, but it's still far better than the alternative.
Oh, completely. I'll add to that though now is, when do you know that you've done enough as a manager, right? You're set. I'll go back to Japan because I learned a big lesson there. There was one conversion we did where we were converting from a settlement day platform. So I did all the accounting on settlement date to a trade date platform. I know it sounds funny. No one does settlement date anymore, but that's the way it used to be done. So big conversion is happening one evening and things aren't going great. It's 11 o'clock at night. Everyone's speaking Japanese. All right. I don't speak Japanese. By the way, I speak survival Japanese. For instance, Sugi no Shingo Hidari Imagata Kudasai, which is, excuse me, at the next traffic light, please take a left. So I can do some stuff like that, but that's it. All right. So I started getting really stressed because I couldn't take over.
Right.
So stressed, Chris, I went to the bathroom and got sick.
Oh, man.
Right. That's physical. Like, I got ill. Then I walked out and I'm like, you know what? I've done everything we can do. We were prepared. Everything's there. I've got some senior people working for me that are in charge. I walked over. I said, you have my phone. If you need me, no matter what time, call me. You can wake me up, but I'm getting out of your hair now because I realize you having to report back and forth, right, is actually slowing you down. You've got it. And I walked away. They did fine. And then I realized at that point, for me, I've never had stress after that because I realized as long as I'm prepared, I've done this, I got a plan, I'm not going to be stressed. And that served me very well. But I had to go through that little lesson, which was fairly painful.
That's a valuable insight. I think, yeah, that planning prep, so important for all of us to succeed. You mentioned like that was a tough moment, I guess. That was a tough sort of moment in time. Have you had any tough periods across your career that you think have shaped you and your direction of travel?
Lots. There's tons as we go through. And it's one of those things where I can't get into too many details, but I will say that there are times in the career over 40 years where implementations weren't going well. I remember sitting in with four COOs who weren't happy at the time and having to answer questions about each one of their business for them. That was really, really difficult. And you just have to go with that. I remember having to say no to a deal. And this was interesting because, and this was at Northern, where we had bid for a deal and we knew the other competitor and it was down to the last 2 weeks. And we just had a feeling because of all demands coming to us that this wasn't going to work. And culturally, it was the wrong thing to have this client with us. So I called them up and said, you have another provider, right? You can go with, yes, Pete. They're just as good as you guys, right? He did all these things. And I said, okay, that's good to know because I don't want to leave you in a lurch. We're backing out. We're no longer interested in the business. But I walked away from $40 million in revenue.
Wow.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I will tell you later on, it turned out to be the right decision based on what happened. All right. So that one was good. But sometimes you have to make these decisions and you go left or go right and you're just saying, okay, did I make the right one? Because you don't really like turning down revenue in this business. And we did. That was tough. And another one, which was interesting, was, again, this was back in the State Street days. So one of my jobs at State Street was to help create the Middleopolis business. So I was involved when PIMCO, which was really the first organization that outsourced, I was on the other side of that. Right? So we created the middle office business for this industry. That's great. And one day our CEO calls me and says, Pete, I got a call from PIMCO. And you know what? In the contract, it says that we will keep up with the modern standards. I forget the words. They didn't matter, right? So we agreed that we would do daily recs on all of the OTCs. Now, nowadays, everybody does that, right? You go back 25 years ago, not everybody did that. It took a lot of people. So I needed about 100 people to deal with that book, right? And I said, well, do I get the budget? And no, figure it out. And that's what started the journey of offshoring at State Street, because we had a need. And then we figured it out. And in the end, actually, everybody won. Okay, so it was a good deal for State Street, good deal for PIMCO. We did it. But it was hard because I sat there for a couple of days with, what am I going to do, right? If I hired 100 people in Boston, I got a big problem. I can't do that. So you have to sit down and say, all right, you're in that box. And sometimes it takes creating new things. And so, well, we did that.
So that was the start of the Indian footprint, was the PIMCO outsourcing.
And you were right in the middle of it.
That's awesome.
I still laugh, Chris, when people talk to me about, State Street did this and, I stayed with it with Syntel. I'm like, yeah, I know. You're around long enough, you have impact, right, on different things. And they've unwound some of the stuff that we've done.
Great.
Right? Everything has a lifespan and then they change.
Very good. Now, back to that creativity as well that you mentioned earlier. I guess something that is important for all of us is influencers, personal influencers on our career. Is there anyone in particular that stands out as someone that's influenced you and your direction and helped you on that path to success?
So I would say not one person, Chris. But what I will say is that a long time ago, I took the position that every boss I had was the boss for a reason. Some of them, I didn't really understand why they were the boss, but yeah, they were. That meant they did something really well and I can learn from that. And everyone was different. So one boss, this guy, Bob Williams, who was a great mentor to me, he was unbelievable strategy. So he was a strategic thinker and really helped me understand, helped me think through that. My current boss, Mike, he's the best data guy you'll ever meet. He can analyze numbers nine ways to Sunday and has taught me a ton about the value of the data underneath. And we chuckle because I still like to make decisions on, we're just going to do this. That's the right thing. Well, where's the data? Okay, I'll go get the data. All right. So we still do that, but we make a good team, but I've learned a ton from that. And so if you go through the litany of bosses I've had, right, it's a collection of all of them that have actually shaped me into who I am.
Very good.
Taking the best bits, maybe not some of the other bits.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. Because you got to check your ego at the door. Like, they're a boss for a reason. So what are they doing? And even if it's a term, the classic one, this person's got promoted because they manage up. Okay. Do you manage up? Maybe you should think about adding that to your repertoire. All right. That might be the worst case scenario, but you got to do it. I had one boss, the most organized person I've ever met. Great. And that's how he was successful. And so, everybody's just different.
I hear you. But no, that sounds like a great approach to sort of pick off those best bits. And then I guess that adds to your versatility as well. There's so many strings to your bow in your role today. There's probably that medley of everything you've learned over the years and all those people that you've interacted with.
It is, Chris, but I would also say the interesting piece is as your journey moves up, what you're learning changes too. So if we use the football analogy, right? You start off as a player, you then become the captain, then you get to be the manager, right? Next thing you know, you're the owner, right? Then you run the league and think there's different skills, right? If you're running a league, you can't jump in and play the game. No, that's not your job. Your job is to make sure everything's functioning. And so, how do I learn from that? Who teaches me that? So it's very different along the way. And you have to recognize the different role that you have.
That's a great analogy. I might pinch that one, Pete. Very good. And I guess looking forwards a little bit, we've learned a ton about you, which has been fabulous. So we should probably close by looking ahead. What excites you specifically around the future for our industry?
Yes, twofold right now. I'll start off with what I love about financial services, Chris, is that over 40 years, there's been incredible innovation such that things get innovated. And at the same time, you commoditize stuff that was innovated 20 years ago. And then every time something gets completely commoditized and automated, there's new things popping up that change everything. It's never been stagnant, right? Because of that innovation. So what's happening today? It's really two different innovations are coming at the same time. So you have AI, which is changing everything. And then you have digital assets and tokenization, which is changing everything. And so those two big streams are going to hit. And I think in the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to wake up with a very different ecosystem and a very different operating model for our industry. And that's exciting to be here at the beginning to help define it and shape it and implement it. And everyone's worried, wow, what's that going to mean about jobs? I'm like, well, the people that were processing mortgages, 25 years ago manually, they're doing something different today. I'm fairly convinced that there'll be other jobs that are created via all this other stuff that's now being innovated. We just don't know what they are yet. And they will discover that as we go through.
I hear you. Yeah, and couldn't agree more on those two streams. They're two absolute monsters, aren't they? Playing out in parallel. It's going to be really interesting to see how we track the transition path is what I guess excites us.
And I haven't spoken a lot about Northern, but I will say today, I love where we are. And literally what I've told some stock analysts is we're big enough where we can afford to invest in AI and all the digital assets we need, et cetera. But we're also small enough where I think we can convert and pivot faster than some of the bigger players. And so if we can get it right and we can spend our money wisely, we can't be first movers. We got to be fast followers. But if we can be fast followers and convert faster, we can end up with a more efficient model and a fit for purpose model in the new ecosystem before anybody else. So that's our goal. I'm not embarrassed. I tell anyone who wants to know it, that's what we have to do to win the game. And I think because of our size, which is right in the middle, we're either the biggest of the small guys or the smallest of the big, right? That's a great place to be in this new technology paradigm that we're in.
Completely agree. I think you guys are in a fair place. The amount of client trust you have as well. I know how important your client relationships are to you, and the trust they have in you to take them on that journey is immense. And I think will hold you in great stead. Very good stuff. So Pete, look, there's one more that I wanted to squeeze in with your permission. Again, looking ahead and thinking about, I guess, where you were all those years ago when you were starting out in the industry, what would your advice be for a new starter in financial services today?
The good news is I speak to a lot of groups that are starting at Northern, and they ask this question, what advice for us? And so here's what I say, Chris. I say, imagine all 10 of you right here are doing the same job, right? You come in at the same time. You come in at 8 o'clock in the morning. Your quality is perfect. You get the job done on time, right? And you go home. You think, I should get promoted. I've done everything they've asked and I've done a great job. But wait a minute, there's 10 of you that have done the same thing. Who gets promoted? And I usually get blank looks. Like, wait a minute, I hadn't thought about that. This is a competition. Not only do I have to do what I'm told and do it well, I've got to be better than the others. So what does that mean? That means you have to take risks. And people are like, what do you mean risks? I said, well, as a new employee, you have to risk something. By the way, the only thing you can risk is your time. And that means staying late, coming up with an idea that may be a great idea or a bad idea, presenting that, do some programming on the weekend, but you can risk your time. And if you're successful and do it well, you'll get promoted. If you're not, you took a shot. As you move forward in the career, you get to risk more things, all the way to my level where you buy a company. If I'm going to spend a couple $100 million on a company, okay, great. You don't think that I keep this job if I do that and it doesn't work. So you have to not only take risks, but you have to be one that's been more successful. And hopefully over time, you do build up enough chits where even if you get some things wrong, which I've gotten plenty wrong, right? You still keep going because they realize in aggregate, you're doing more good than harm here with the decisions you're making. That's my advice.
High value advice, Pete. I love it. And back to that sort of competitive nature that you talked about a bit earlier.
Absolutely.
Love it. So thank you so much. I've loved the chat. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. I'm sure our listeners will love listening back to your insights and advice. Best of luck at Northern and the current role. Not that you'll need it. To round off is worth me saying you are officially a Tonic Titan. Thank you so much.
Oh, and let me say, Chris, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it and appreciate and enjoyed the conversation. But also, for the record, I do appreciate the work that Tonic has done with us as well. You're helping us along the journey, and that has been great as a partnership. So thank you there, too.
Oh, thank you. Absolute pleasure.